Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
20 federal.
1 million pounds.
Million euro.
Million.
Aldi. Million. Rubli.
The
Scheibe Tottenham.
Ship.
Hello everyone, Shannon Gus here, getting you ready for our week one Australian Survivor All-Star exit interviews. There is a lot going on, and as I discussed in the recap podcast with Rob Cesanino, which I also hope that you checked out because that was so fun, we're going to be doing these podcasts as separate podcasts, different to last season, and just kind of have every exit interview on this one exit interview podcast per week, and then have the recap as its own podcast, and hopefully we can just kind of get the content to you a bit quicker that way. And everyone can have what they need without it being this like 1 4-hour podcast. So, you know, we have Shane Gould coming up first here, which is amazing. How often do you get to chat to Shane Gould? Then Jericho next at about 20 minutes in, which was, again, always awesome to chat to Jericho. And then 36 minutes in, I chat to Daisy about that huge tribal council and everything with that. So that was a really enlightening discussion as well. Hope you guys enjoy that. Hope you check out the recap with Rob and Talking Tribal, which I do with Luke Tokey and James Matheson. It is honestly a lot going on right now, but this season deserves all the content we are giving it. So enjoy the exit interviews, and I will see you on the other side.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Shane. Thank you so much for coming on to Rob Has a Podcast. It is such an honor to talk to an Australian icon and a Survivor winner.
Thanks very much, yeah.
So going on to the show, you are obviously seen as a huge threat. So what were your expectations going in? Did you think that you would really be targeted from the beginning?
Yes. I did anticipate that would happen. So that's why I worked pretty hard from once we got to the camp, actually even before we got to the camp, you know, when, you know, during the game, during the challenges, I was sussing people out and you know, working out, okay, who am I? I decided I'd have a secret friend. You know, so I was working that pretty hard, and I was talking to people, getting to know them, having them get to know me, and reconnecting with people like Zach and Sean and Lydia, and getting to know, you know, other people that I'd seen, and so, and just compliment them and basically be like a car salesman. And be friendly, you know, wanting to sell myself to them and establish rapport. So, because I knew that, yes, I would be a threat. So I was working the social relationships with, you know, with intention to try and have people like me.
Did you anticipate Lydia being so gung-ho and taking you out?
I gave the credit to, I would give the credit to Harry. I think it was Harry's his work, not Lydia's work. So if I was on a jury, I'd say Harry got that, made that move, not Lydia. Lydia supported him, and it was her intention too, you know, and she was, you know, stubborn. But I think Harry convinced everyone else. I think it was more his move. So it really, if it was a blind side, it was a soft blind side. But I think it was Harry's, I'd give Harry the points, not Lydia. But Lydia had the very strong will to get revenge and to redeem herself. And, you know, so that carried the vote. And, you know, she was able, well, Shawnee's comments, you know, I'm sure that there might have been things off camera where she wanted to have a go at the, you know, the prize money and so I think everyone wanted to have a go at the prize money again, so it was an obvious target to go, and I knew that, but I tried pretty hard from the get go to convince people to make the game really interesting and difficult by keeping me in there. And I didn't get the chance to convince them, you know, that I might be a good shield, you know, for people, and a number, and that I might have the experience, the know-how. How do you negotiate through the relationships and the challenges and the social game? You know, how do you negotiate your way through to prevent being voted out? So someone. So that's why I think maybe if I got alongside Harry, instead of trying to get him out, tried to align myself with him, we might have been quite a force to reckon with.
Sean did vote with you. What was it like reconnecting with her? Did you have much of a reconnection on the island?
Yeah, we did. And we'd had some social times together. We'd had, a meal and some coffee, and I'd had conversations with her. And we went to Fiji together afterwards, and in a few months after the reunion and the finale. So we'd had time off camera and together to establish a relationship. So we just started talking. Like I was busy getting to know other players at the camp. And I was getting around to being with Sean, and then Sean, we had a 1 minute conversation saying, "Hi Shane, we haven't talked about how we'll play this. Are you going to do you want to work together again?" And I said, "Yeah, I want to do that. How about we talk about it more later? But yeah, definitely, I'd like to work with you again." So that was my intention. But because I was so preoccupied with trying to establish connections with other people that I didn't know that well, I didn't spend as much time with Sean, so that probably didn't get on camera.
One of those people you were trying to connect with was Henry. So how did you kind of approach him? What was it about Henry that made him maybe like a secret friend option?
Well, I saw Henry play in the other season. I think was it season two or season mm-hmm. one?
Season two, yeah.
Yeah. So one time he tried to throw a game to influence the play, and I thought, that's really interesting that he was willing to buck the trend that I hadn't thought about that idea of throwing a game to go to a tribal council to vote someone out of your team that you wanted to get rid of to help your own game, even though it didn't help the team. I thought that was really interesting, and then pretending to be the yoga teacher. I think that was a really good act, and I liked his manner. And then he was strong. So when we played the first two challenges in season five, I was watching. I was just observing people how they were pushing the how they're working with each other, and what sort of leadership role they took, and if they were, waited and patient, and I picked Henry because I thought that he's physically strong, but he's patient and calm, and he's collected, but he can lead or he can take instruction. So I thought, he's probably a really steady sort of guy. And so when we got back to the camp, I said, "Do you want to come and look for some firewood or some coconuts?" And with the intention of saying, "Oh, Henry, I've got an idea. Got this plan that I'd like to talk to you about. Would you be my..." So that was the first thing. And then the second time, I said, "Would you be my secret friend? This is how I think it would play out." And he said, "Yep, sure, we'll do that."
Was there anyone you were surprised didn't vote with you? Because Sean voted with you, Henry did. Who else did you expect to vote with you against Harry?
I had a talk with Jono, and Zach and Nick, knowing full well that Nick was, he was charming, but also, had the reputation of the snake. Didn't realise how much of the snake reputation he had. And then Michelle, I was trying to, get alongside of. Sean, I knew Lydia, would be after me. Lee, I hadn't really had much of a conversation with Lee. And Abby, I just started to talk with her. And I can't remember the others.
We saw that you were studying chimp politics in the lead up. How do you feel that went out when actually playing on the island? Was it helpful?
Yes, I think it was, because I understood you know, how the relationships worked and the power of the relationships and the seemingly, you know, ordinary, you know, interactions actually had deep significance. And you know, when I won Survivor 3, you know, I told the jury in pitching my game, look, I played a subtle game. There's a lot more to this than these sort of grandiose, dramatic moves. You know, you've got to be watching people. You've got to pay attention to the, you know, to the physical contact, and that's all in the chimpanzee politics. It's how chimp society works. It's that appeasement, that reconciliation, and all those things that I said. It's about keeping relationships, keeping the peace, and keeping harmony. Even though there might be some arguments and fights about things, but then there's always a reconciliation afterwards. So I think I was quite aware of that. You know, I've been around a lot of people and I've lived a lot of years. So I've been with so many different people from different walks of life, and you know, raised in a family of six and raised six, four children myself, had lots of visitors, had customers, and you know, so you learn how to read people. And so I think that really was a benefit to me coming into the game. So when I was watching, you know, watching the, I was really tuned in to try and see how people were relating. And so the chimp politics, you know, how I understood, you know, chimpanzee society, I could see so many parallels in survivor tribal life, and it really helped me to understand the subtle, you know, moves, and just people grooming each other, you know, plaiting each other's hair or brushing some sand off, or sitting close together and slapping someone on the leg, and you know, just rubbing shoulders with someone, and you know, saying, "Oh, let's go for a swim," and you know, sitting out in the water and splashing each other. You know, all those things are ways, you know, really subtle ways to form a connection and a bond, and you know, make you know, be socially comfortable, and with you know, in the group. So that's what I was looking for, and it did really help me, I believe.
That is fascinating stuff, Shane. Honestly, I want to learn more about the complexities of chimp politics. I didn't know how much was involved in that.
Yeah.
Who were you looking forward to working with on the other tribe, maybe, that you didn't get a chance, obviously, to meet up with?
Well, Tarzan, you know, was a you know, gave me a big hug, and he was really respectful and deferential to me, and you know, and you know, he said, "Oh, Shane Gould, you know, he gave me a big bear hug, and I said, "I love your beard, and you know, and, you know, look forward to playing the game with you and getting to know you." And so, I think Tarzan, you know, would have been interesting to play with. And again, Matt Rogers, he was a good buddy, he was a good ally, but I was also a little bit wary of him because he's a very strong personality and takes lead, perhaps without asking people for, you know, if it was okay to be a leader. He often took leadership without, you know, full group approval, but still, you know, we had some private connections, you know, close connections, like he was concerned about his, you know, his kids, and he had a sore back, and in Survivor 3, and I used to heat up a hot rock to keep warm. It's like a hot water bottle, and I found these stones that didn't crumble in the like basalt, not limestone rocks, and I put these basalt rocks in the fire and heated them up, and then wrapped them in coconut fibre. And I'd put them on my belly or my back, and that helped me to sleep at night if I was a little bit cold. So, you know, one night I offered Matt, you know, my hot rock. So that was a form of grooming.
All works into chimp politics.
Yeah, it does. So you know, he appreciated that, and that helped the pain in his back to go, so he could get to sleep again. So we had some special moments. So I saw him. And on the other, on the yellow tribe, you know, I thought, well, if we get a tribe swap or if I get the opportunity, certainly I'll be, you know, trying to work with him again.
What was the main reason that you targeted Harry? Was it that you heard he was coming for you, or was it separate to that?
No, it was separate. I saw how Harry played the game in season four, and I watched episodes over and over again, and particularly ones where he featured. And I was trying to work out how he got to be, you know, in the positions. And so I watched his conversations with people, and I've said this in another interview, that he was a bit like a vacuum cleaner salesman. So he made his idea your idea. So you know how vacuum cleaner salesman says, oh,
I don't think I've ever bought a vacuum cleaner from a salesman.
Oh, yeah. No, I had the experience, you know, I bought a vacuum cleaner for one of my sons in Western Australia, and a super duper, you know, ended up with a, you know, really expensive but really good vacuum cleaner. But the vacuum cleaner saleswoman, you know, made me, you know, believe that I really needed to have this vacuum cleaner over, you know, like $1,000 vacuum cleaner rather than a $300 vacuum cleaner, or, you know, or a $100 vacuum cleaner, and showed, you know, she poured sand on the carpet and then poured fluff and, you know, and vacuumed it with one vacuum cleaner, and then they ask you those questions, you know. You know, you wouldn't want to have this sort of sand left in your carpet, would you, with your baby crawling around on it? But no, you wouldn't want to have that much sand. But look at this one. This one will vacuum up all the sand, and you know that the dog hair and the sand and the fluff, it's all going to be picked up. So they tell you until eventually you say, I want this vacuum cleaner, you know. So they make her idea becomes your idea. So Harry would, you know, what I saw when he was talking with Janine and Pete here, and other players, he'd go and talk to them and he'd scratch his beard, you know, and he'd say, "Who do you think we should get out? You know, I'm thinking maybe, you know, maybe Jono," and they'd say, "Why do you think Jono?" I said, "Well, what do you reckon? You know, no, what do you reckon? Why would we want to get Jono out?" So he'd turn it back and get them to talk, and then he'd leave it sit for a while and say, "Well, let's just sit on this for a while." And then he'd come back and say, "Well, what do you think? Who do you think we should get out?" And they'd say, "Oh, we think Jono." And said, "That's a really good idea." But it was Harry's idea in the first place, and he just seeded the idea. And so Harry's idea became their idea until they, you know, so they, you know, he could say, "Oh, it was Pia's idea, or it was, you know, Janine's idea to get Jono out," whereas all along he'd set it up, you know, to be the, to initiate the idea, to seed the idea, to make the suggestion. So I saw that cleverness in Harry, and I thought, well, that's pretty smart. So I've got to watch out for that.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, Shane, thank you so much for coming on. Last quick final question before you go is, would you play again, having won and gone out first? That's a pretty big experience.
Look, it's really hard. You know, I think I'm a bit old. You know, like I haven't played the old card, but the level of intensity of the games in season three was, you know, just to my limit. And then I saw season four, the difficulty of the games, you know, that was pretty hard. I'd have to train probably pretty hard for 6 months, you know, climbing and probably doing commando courses and you know, really intensive yoga and Pilates, you know, to have the physical capacities to be confident that I wouldn't get hurt. And then they'd have to and seeing the wrestling that's going to happen tonight in tonight's episode, I'd be worried about my physical abilities and letting the team down and getting hurt. So if I was to play a third time, I'd want the games to be a little bit more cerebral, perhaps a bit more water games, more swimming skills, more and more puzzles and, you know, perhaps mazes and balance, you know, like carrying and, you know, and less sort of that physical contact. So
yeah,
yes, I would consider a third one, but the challenge would have to be different.
Well, that is wonderful to hear that you would consider it, Shane. I love seeing you back on the screen, no matter how briefly, and nothing can take away the win. So thank you so much for coming on to talk with us.
That's great. Thanks very much, Shannon. That's a really good question. So I hope you can communicate those to the fans, because it's a very, very interesting game, and it's been a privilege to play it. So I'm glad to be able to help you to communicate that to the fans.
Thanks so much, Shane. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, Shannon.
Jerry, welcome back to Broadcaster Podcast, but I am so sad that it's under these circumstances. This is not right.
It was inevitable.
I know. Did you feel that coming into the season? Like, were you that worried being a winner that it would come that early?
Yeah, well, I came into the game not worried, I think, because I felt like I didn't have anything to lose, you know what I mean? Or I didn't have anything to prove. Mm-hmm. But I also didn't think that they were gunning for me that early. But, I didn't realize that target was so big.
When you saw that Shane was the first boot, did that make you more worried that, like, winners had a target?
Yeah, look, so I know that we both came from the same pool, which is that we were both winners and we're the only two winners that came back. But we're two different winners as well. So when she was voted out, I assumed that it was purely for the challenges early on the stage, and those were really important, and that she was going to potentially, you know, weaken, slow them down. But when it came to me, I thought that my tribe, they weren't thinking about what I could contribute, but more so who was a threat in my tribe, and they saw me far more threatening. Obviously, I didn't think that they saw me that threatening, but even on the watching it back, I was seeing them saying, "Oh, and that's the reason why Jericho won," and I'd be like, "Wow, I didn't even see how much they would be talking behind my back." During that time, I thought Moana was literally the one to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really big compliment, but it's also a reason to get you out. So that's unfortunate.
Of course. I mean, I was so honored by that. Hey.
Yeah, I mean, the way they were talking about you in the episode was like, he's so likable, you can't let him take an inch or he'll get a mile. So that's like, that's a really big compliment. It just sucks that it's used against you.
Hmm.
I think a question we've all had about Dave is like, I thought that you and Dave would have the Luke connection, but then he targeted you. So what was your relationship like with him on the island?
Yeah, it was so funny because I knew that we both came in with the stigma that we both had worked with Luke. And I actually thought perhaps that if I was closer with him, it would give off those vibes that Jericho and David are only working together because of the whole Luke thing. And I was thinking, I don't want to, you know, approach that too quickly. But when we did have that conversation, the first thing he asked me was, what do you think of me? And straight away, it was like, you know, you're put on this like spot. And I know he wanted to try and suss me out and try and figure out where I stood with him. But I didn't want to give him what he wanted to hear, only because that's just not me. I think there's that pride where I'm like, I'm not going to give you just kiss ass and just so you can hear it. But I also didn't go, I don't want to work with you. All I said was like, oh, I think you're a great player. And I was like, I was so totally respect that and stuff. But I didn't give him anything like, you know, I want to work with you and all that stuff. And, I just want, because I already, like during that time, this is maybe day two, and I already started seeing so many of, you know, his people giving that already, you know, that, I really like you, I want to work with you, I really want to do that. And I don't want to be that eighth person that says the same thing. I just didn't give him what he wanted. And I just kind of wanted to see the rest of what everyone was offering at that time. And I actually fell more closer and connected to Phoebe and AK. And I felt like with AK and Phoebe, when we were having chats, we were on that same level. No one was upping each other. No one was trying to suss each other out. It was more like, I get you. I get where you're coming from. Let's go from here, you know, and let's negotiate. That's how I felt with them, and that's why I was drawn to them more. It didn't show much of it, but it was really, I felt like they were going to be my number one and two.
So how confident were you then that they would vote with you? I mean, even if you thought that it was Mo Hope as a target instead of yourself, did you think that your whole side would be okay?
Yeah. So, going into tribal just before it, I knew there was that, Moana, Tarzan, Jackie and, Matt voting, with me. It was just a matter of trying to convince AK and Phoebe to come, my way. Little did I know that it was never going to be reciprocal, but at that time, and I'm being honest, like I actually, didn't think that, that seven was always going to target me. I thought that, you know, Moana just didn't perform well. She underperformed, and her name was always being thrown out before the challenge as well, that, you know, she was kind of isolating herself. And so she had kind of dug her own grave, and I thought, oh, poor girl, I want to see if I can try and, fight for her, or at least try to keep my numbers intact by trying to sway Phoebe and AK. I guess I tried to fight, but not enough. And the reason why I didn't fight enough was because, in my head I was thinking, as long as it's not me, on the first go, that's all right. But had I, and that's why they blindsided me, because it was a great blindside. Mm-hmm. Had I known that I was that it was me, I would have done everything in my possibility to really fight for it. But that's the greatest part of a blindside. You want to blind someone so that they don't make any irrational, you know, moves that could, you know, change the vote on the last minute.
Yeah, and so why were you drawn to, like, what they're calling, like, the older good-looking group, and then there's, like, the young good-looking group, but you, I think, are, like, the youngest guy on the season, so how did those groups kind of form then?
Yeah, isn't that funny? You saw that whole group forming, and obviously, you know, they were coined the young and the more beautiful looking people. But actually, it was just like the social butterflies, and, you know, obviously they were a lot younger and all of that stuff. And they were also friends from outside of the game, you know. Some of them are, some of them aren't. But you saw that naturally. And in reality, there is that, you see this in school, like, just naturally, and they don't mean to do it, but if you feel like you get along with someone that's, you know, similar to you, you tend to draw to them. And unfortunately, when that group kind of formed together, there is the people who are leftovers, or the outcasts, or the ones that don't fit that mold. And, you know, Moana didn't fit that mold. You know, the older people didn't fit that mold. And so when I started seeing that completely unfold in front of my eyes, I felt like I could actually join either side. And maybe 3 years ago, I would have joined that group easily, because that's naturally the group I would join in. But I'm coming into All Stars, and I was like thinking, you know what, let's make this fun and go against who I wouldn't naturally go with. And I wanted to play and work with the older guys, and I wanted to see how they work. And obviously that decision was my downfall. I chose the minority, and in Survivor 101, you always work with the majority just to get through the first wave. Unfortunately, I made that wrong decision, that was my downfall. I was third in line, and they made a great move to get rid of me.
And to do that move, they had this whole cookie plan and cookie alliance, and, like, watching that back, how wrong is it that you were a victim to that? That is, like, a terrible level of irony.
Yeah, so with that cookie, it was almost like the final thing that solidified that seven, you know. And I know how powerful trading anything that was a commodity or to trade a loyalty to someone. And, you know, I did that with my own cookie the first time I played. And people think, oh yeah, he just, you know, gave a cookie, that doesn't mean anything. But the significance of it is far more powerful than, you know, an idol that can save someone, because that's done. But for me, when I had these cookies, it almost, like, formed this bond that was long lasting. And I had that with Sarah. I had that with Luke. And there was even with Henry, who just never saw me targeting him because he was just so blinded to the idea that Jericho and I are like really close. And this is what happened. So when I saw, like, watching it back, I'm like, wow, they really did solidify their whole group of seven with that cookies. There's no turning back.
Yeah, cookies are insanely powerful in Australian Survivor, it seems. More than they probably should be. But as you said, you know, anything out there is a commodity. How confident were you in the crying gambit? Do you feel like people did buy it, but it was just too late for you? Or do you think, like, some people were onto you?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know David was, like, sussing me out. And that's what I'm saying. He always susses you out. And that's, like, I didn't see that. The whole time I was having a little sookie doing all of that thing. And I was trying to target hearts of, Phoebe mainly, because I knew she was coming in quite a little bit emotional, to tribal council, because she was torn, obviously torn that she's going to vote me out. But no, little did I know that it was me. I thought she was torn, like, you know, that she's voting with them, to get rid of Mo. But yeah, I was trying to persuade her using my speech. But, people were asking if those tears were real or not and all of that stuff. But I'll tell you the truth. So that was the strategy coming in to try and make that speech, blah, blah, blah. But halfway in, I got a little bit chuckled in my throat, and I started to believe the things that I was saying. You know what I mean? I was like, because I was really saying these really big things about how you put your heart on the line and you do make these friendships. And as much as I was trying to persuade her, it was almost like getting to me that I started kind of like getting emotional. And those were genuine tears. But then halfway in those small seconds, I started snapping back, and I brought myself to that state where it was like, Jericho, you are still in tribal council. Pull your head back. Try use this as leverage to get to bring Phoebe in it, maybe AK, and you could pull in, get the moves, get the numbers. And unfortunately, this wasn't the case, and I was the one that got blindsided.
Did you have a lot of a relationship with AK and Phoebe from the outside, or was it mostly like an on-island connection?
It was literally on island. I mean, obviously, I know that AK and I've known AK from our season, and
yeah, I mean,
you
voted him out, right?
So times with. Yeah, you know, there was moments where, like, after a Survivor season, you have, like, teas and coffees and, like, had yarns and stuff. But he lives in Adelaide. I hardly see the guy. And I don't know anything about Phoebe. I just know of her. I just knew Phoebe, who did a podcast. And then when I came into the island, the thing that I gravitated to them the most was, one, I felt like I related to them, that we looked at each other as threats, and we wanted to go move forward with keeping the threats because we knew that it was a mutual benefit for the three of us moving forward, but also that both of them, I really respected them as game players, that they were, you know, they were both voted out pre-merge, but they were powerhouses in their own right because they made risky moves and they weren't afraid of it. So when I had proposed to them initially, maybe this was early at the beginning, before Shane's tribal council, I actually proposed that we needed to split David and Lockie because they were so they had this much power that I was seeing, and people were almost like giving them that kind of like, you know, they're so invincible because we need them for the next couple of challenges. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't believe in the idea that just because you're an alpha male and you're going to contribute well for the first few challenges, that you are invincible and we shouldn't consider you as people on the chopping block. Like, I was like, yeah, they should be, because that means that if that's the case, then by default, people like me and people who aren't the greatest, biggest people are already by default on the chopping block. And I was like, that's bullshit. That's I wanted to change the game. So I was like, why don't we try and split their split them up and get rid of David, because I felt like out of the two, David was the one with the mind, and Lockie, if he was by himself, he would just kind of like run around and have a little tantrum. And I was like, but that's fine with me. I can deal with a tantrum big guy in back at camp. Whereas having David still in the game, he's more than happy to run around looking for idols. Do you know what I mean? And obviously when I threw those proposals in to Phoebe and AK, little did I know that it wasn't as reciprocal, and they actually fed everything I was saying to David and Lockie. But then I have to own the things that I had to, because, you know, like there was no other choice. Like,
yeah,
for me anyway, I was like, I may as well try fight and play hard, or I was gonna go home anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a really, really hard spot, Jericho. Before I let you go, I just want to ask, would you play again?
Whew, that is a tough one. Hey, I mean, I'm all drained out from both seasons. I think I would only ever come back if they had maybe another flip, six more seasons, because I think I'm also sick of me, like on TV.
No one is sick of you.
And I'm sick of
you're the only one, if that's true.
Yeah. And as a fan of the show, I actually love watching new players and showing new, innovative, creative moves. And you got to have a bit of that. You want to make a franchise that just is so fresh and always new. I mean, you'd agree with that as a fan too.
Yeah, I mean, I think both have merit. Well, I certainly hope we get to see you play again. But until then, I think, as I said to Shane yesterday, nothing can take away the win. I love your Instagram video reminding people of that. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast again, Jericho. And I really do wish it was better under better circumstances.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, Shannon. How are you?
Daisy. Oh, my God. That was a massive tribal council last night. I'm so sorry that you were on the wrong end of it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm very sorry, but what can you do, right?
That honestly was one of the craziest tribal councils I've ever seen. And I just, like, I have to start by asking about your relationship with David. Like, how had you been in between, obviously, like, you blindsiding him the first time that he was still hanging on to, and then playing with him again? Did he seem like you guys were okay?
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, there was only 6 weeks in between seasons, so David and I hadn't really had a chance to go for our peace walk yet. But I did know that, you know, he wasn't going to really trust me, and I did kind of keep trying to warn my Sexy Seven Alliance about that. But they kept saying, one more vote, one more vote. So that's what I did, and it was at my demise.
Yeah, like, why do you think he was still so hung up on it, considering, like, you guys were on opposite sides at the time that he went home? It's not like you were a main ally betraying him.
Well, yeah, I definitely think Dave loves to play the part of the villain. So whether he was hung up on it or not is regardless. I think I was just a good target for him, and it was a good survivor move. So, you know, here I am.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, like, objectively, do you feel like it was a good revenge plan, or do you feel like that he shouldn't have done that?
Hey, it's a great move if it's on your resume and you're setting it final two, because look how well orchestrated it was. Regardless of who it was, the way it was put together, it was awesome. It was, you know, stuff for Survivor history books. So I think, yeah, absolutely it was a good move for him, because if he goes through to the final two, I'll be his first crown jewel.
Yeah. And as you said, like, so you felt that he didn't trust you, so you were going to come for him at a point. So maybe he picked up on that.
Oh, absolutely. He got me before I got him. That's what Survivor's about. And I just wish I'd got him earlier. I wish I hadn't worked with him. And yeah.
On the island specifically, was there any indication that something was amiss in your relationship?
The fact that he came to me and had that chat at the Whelp saying how he wasn't confident. Dave doesn't play with no confidence. Dave plays from the top, whether he's on the top or the bottom. So that should have been a big red flag that I didn't take. Lockie and I also had a gut feeling that day that something wasn't right. We discussed it numerous times. And also, you know, they always say the night that you start feeling confident in Survivor is the night you're going home. And I was feeling pretty confident in the days leading up to that tribal council.
How had you felt, you know, before then getting votes at that second tribal council? Did that not kind of shake your confidence there?
Yeah, it did, but they were the minority. So, you know, my name could have come out of that urn. My name did come out of that urn five times, and I knew that at that point my seven seemed strong. I didn't realise Dave was double-crossing us, so why would I have any reason to believe otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in your relationship with Matt Rogers, who obviously voted for you in episode two, but that seemed like Jericho was leading it. And then in episode three, you know, he seemed to really want to keep you around from a strength perspective. And David said, like, it was his condition to working with him. So even though that you were on opposite sides, did you have much of a personal relationship?
Yeah, definitely. Matt was definitely who I was closest with on the other side of the tribe that wasn't in my alliance. Him and I got along really well. And he's someone that, as a sporting figure, I've always really looked up to. So it was a bit of a pinch myself moment playing with him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he was definitely who I was closest with on the other side. We did have a good relationship. We did talk strategy. After that Jericho vote, he came up and he said, I didn't want to put your name down, but I did because I knew we weren't going to get anywhere with it and you weren't going to go home, and I want you to know that. And, you know, I do genuinely believe that's the case. And like we saw last night, he did want to save me. He's spoken to me about it, and he said he actually wanted Phoebe gone, but, you know, Dave had his condition, and that was that.
Yeah, you had this alliance of seven, the Cookie Alliance. What kind of made that makeup? We saw the two alliances come together in this very concrete way. So why do you think those alliances were drawn to each other?
It's tough to say. I think a personal connection came into it a lot. There are a few members of Vakama that very much were offered to be worked with and used phrases like, oh, I don't want to play too big and too early, and I'm not ready to talk strategy yet for the first 3 days. And it's like, this is all stars. When are you going to want to start talking strategy, you know? Because if you snooze, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
So those people seem to find themselves in an alliance, with the exception of Jerry, who was playing definitely from the start, and Matt, who was playing definitely from the start. So, you know, I think that was why they kind of ended up the way they did, whereas the seven people that ended up in my alliance wanted to play, and we wanted to play hard from day dot. We landed on Vakama Beach and it started. There was no pause. There was no pretending. The chat started straight away, and it was awesome to be a part of because no one was beating around the bush.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the two sides voted very strongly against each other in both tribal councils. Was that reflected back at camp? Was the disconnect between the two alliances very stark?
Definitely. I would argue that it was, or not argue, but I'd almost say it was schoolyard stuff, borderline, like very clicky. But in saying that, you know, I've heard a few people saying that we were clicky, but it was just as clicky on the other side, you know. It was, there were a group of people, there were two groups of people, and they very much kept to themselves. And we hung out in our groups. And that's the way it worked. But in saying that, I would get to challenges and I'd be happy to go alongside people that weren't in my alliance. That wasn't an issue. It's not like I couldn't make eye contact with them or anything.
Good to know.
But, yeah.
So did you feel that being from season four, which was on as you were leaving, did you feel that there was like a lot of scrutiny on you? Because that seems to have come up a bit, mostly on the other tribe, but I would think across the board.
A bit of scrutiny in what way?
Just in the fact that you were really prevalent before you went out, that you know, season four was on TV. So do you feel like people were just kind of hyper-focused on the season four people?
Yeah. I mean, some people have said that. I didn't feel that way at all. I feel like the people that were scrutinized the most were actually the season threes because they had such strong bonds. Whereas the season four group that went in, you know, Abby and Harry were close, but not super close. Abby and John were close, but not besties. John and Harry are close, but not besties. Dave and I were not close. But, you know, we'd worked together previously, whereas, like, you know, season three, Matt, Milana, Sean, Lydia, Shane, there are so many interconnecting webs there of best friendships that I think they got scrutinized a lot purely because they had these bonds that were just so obvious and so in the limelight on social media that it was hard for them to hide from and it was hard for them to lie about. Whereas, you know, I wasn't hanging out with any of my season four people before I went in. So those relationships weren't really there, obviously. But I also think we're also at an advantage because we went in through like three quarters of the way through our season. So people hadn't seen the end of our season, and that even goes to show in Dave's game. They didn't see how dictatory he had got at the end of season four. So that's why it was so hard to warn them, because I felt like I was warning them about something that was make-believe because they hadn't seen it yet.
And did you feel like from a social standpoint that not having had that time in the community, obviously with your season just airing, did that kind of feel like a disadvantage? Because I would assume everyone else at least like knows each other from just being Survivor players for many years.
Yeah, I actually think it was our biggest advantage because a lot of those votes for people were very personal because they were in the Survivor community. These people drink together, they hang out together, they eat together, they exercise together, they spend weekends and holidays away together. Whereas we were not even fully inducted into the Survivor community yet because we were still on TV. People were still making up their minds about us. So, you know, me, I didn't even bat an eyelid when I voted Jerry out. And that was because I got to know him in the game, but that was it. Whereas you see the other side of the coin in episode two with Phoebe, who really struggled with it because, you know, Jerry comes over to our house for drinks every couple of months. So
right.
I think we were at a big advantage in that way because it didn't seem as personal. Well, it definitely didn't for me.
But who did you just consider your closest ally on the island?
On All Stars?
Yeah.
Definitely Lockie. Yeah, Lockie was my ride or die. He was my number one. I was painfully loyal to him to the point where I probably would have taken him to the end even if I knew I was going to lose. So, yeah, he was definitely my number one. My number two was probably, I would say, Brooke. The three, Lockie, Brooke and I, in that seven, were a bit of a three. So her and I were super close. I was also really close with Flick as well. So, yeah, Lockie was my number one and the girls were closely behind.
You have some very good-looking allies in your two seasons.
We're the sexy seven for a reason.
Yeah, I know. Good choices all around. So was there anyone you were looking forward to working with on the other side that you didn't get a chance to?
Initially, I was looking forward to working with Henry. After that,
really the same mold we're talking about here.
Yeah, I know. But after that idle business, not so much. Mm-hmm. I was also looking forward to playing with Lockie because, I was re-watching season two in the 6 weeks in between my season and going out for All Stars. So it was very much fresh in my mind. Season two were who I was wholly focused on playing with at that point. So, yes, I also would have liked to have played with Nick. But didn't have the opportunity to, unfortunately. And, yeah, would have liked the opportunity to play with Lee as well.
Yeah, I mean, 6 weeks, that's crazy. Like, you're one of only a handful of people who've ever had that short a turnaround. What was the mental, physical toll of that quick turnaround?
The mental toll. The mental toll was you didn't even really adjust back into society because you knew you were going so quickly that what was the point, you know? Like, it was hard to get back into a routine, but you kind of needed to just to keep your sanity with it being on TV and the press and the rumors and everything that were going on. So it was tricky to find that balance. I had to because I had to physically try and get myself back to where I was before I played season four in less than a quarter of the time that I had to prepare the first time around. So it was tough. It was really tough. I think I found it a lot mentally tougher coming out of All Stars than I did season four because you do get to have that decompressed time in Drury Villa and I didn't get that this time.
Do you look back at that like it was the right decision? I know it's hard to, like, obviously knowing kind of how it turned out, but that's a really big call to make. To go back out there so soon.
Absolutely. I would trade the 41 days I had on Champions vs. Contenders for the 7 days I had on All Stars in a heartbeat. I absolutely adored All Stars. I adored my alliance. I adored my tribe. I adored, you know, the game that was being played and the sheer brutalness of it. I was so proud of how I was performing in challenges. I was really happy with my social game. I was stoked with my strategic game. And I just went in and I felt so much more relaxed the second time round, and you know, it was just the best 7 days of my life.
Aww, that's so good to hear. I mean, I'm sorry that Dave took that away for some reason, but
I'm sorry too. I think that was why I was so gutted, was because I was having the best time of my life and it was cut short.
With Brooke being such a close ally, were there conversations maybe about her using her idol for you, you know, being the one that had received votes at the tribal council before?
Yeah. The seven of us said it was either going to be Dave or Daisy. And we chose Dave and we just made the wrong call.
Yeah. Again, another thing that Dave was doing to kind of influence it, which is just crazy. Last question is, would you play again?
100%. I'd pack my bag tomorrow.
Like, at least you should have more of a layoff in between seasons. Like, I think at a point you need to be out in the real world more than you're playing Survivor.
I know. Well, I think I worked out that it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago this time last year that I finished my Survivor application. So the past 12 months have purely been living and breathing Survivor, whether that be training for it, doing all the tests before I went in, playing the game, living through the airing, keeping the secret after both seasons, and then also living through it now.
Yeah, that is a lot. Well, you know, wishing you all the best in that. I'm sorry it had to end in that way, but it was great to see you playing again.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, everyone, there you have it. 3 exit interviews, and hopefully we will get every all-star onto the exit interview podcast this season. That is my aim and my goal. So hope you guys enjoyed that. Hope you enjoyed the recap. Hope you enjoyed Talking Tribal. Please do subscribe to the Reality TV Wrap Up so you never miss any of this content. And to the Talking Tribal podcast, a lot of the internationals want to know where they can get that content. So it's all available via, you know, the podcast and any of the cool visual stuff will be on social media as well. So if you really want to check out a lot of that, I think the easiest way is to kind of go podcast first. So hope you guys enjoyed all of that. What a week. What a first week of Survivor Australia we had. And next week, you know, Winners of War will start and Survivor Global will start. And honestly, I can't even comprehend it, but we're just going to go with it. So thank you guys so much for listening, and I will see you next time. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
1 million pounds.
Million euro.
Million.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.